Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light, and Sandy Fries, our co-host, behavioral cognitive therapist, life coach therapist, is on with us as well. Shane Crum, a wrongfully convicted individual serving two life sentences for a crime he said he did not commit, has been struggling to have the truth brought to light on the coerced statement made by one single witness, a child. A case resulting in very harsh punishment with no evidence. Shane had an option to take a plea and received a 25-year sentence, although he refused this plea because he had been adamant about his innocence from the beginning. Instead, he was given the two life sentences, which unrealistic, even for such an offense, prove. In the United States, which is the only country in the world with mass incarcerations, there are individuals convicted of serious and inflammatory crimes based upon a single witness and without any substantiated documentation and or physical evidence. Moreover, in this particular case, there was an apparent battle over custody issues. We are going to be discussing some of these issues that have caused many to be incarcerated, but we are also going to be talking about the incarceration itself, the causes, the stereotyping, the stereotypical views that the people in the communities have towards prisoners, rather than to judge or not judge, rather than to look at each situation in a different light. We have mass incarceration in this country because there is so much vengeance, so much anger, so much hatred, so much racism, so much power, greed, bribes, whatever it might be. And these are issues that need to be brought out. It needs to be brought to awareness. And we have Sandy on with us, who, again, is not only the co-host, but she's also a therapist. She's worked with a lot of the people who have been incarcerated, as well as those in the communities. She's done a lot of good work. And sometimes her work is not appreciated the way it should be, as with many of us who are trying to do the best we can in bringing light into this dark world of ignorance. So, Sandy, want to talk a little bit about what you do, or I guess come on?
Yes, I do. And thank you for that, Leona. I have a coaching business. Cognitive behavioral therapy is something I am passionate about. And what my niche is to work with those who are reentering society from incarceration, and also those who have had trauma in their life that, you know, can't seem to let it go, because it's my belief that we can all grow from really looking inside ourselves and believing, you know, that we can change, and that we don't have to hold the belief systems we grew up with. That we need to hold on to our authentic mindsets. And you know, that's something that we can all attain with a little bit of work.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, I always say that the best people to work with in any situation, substance abuse issues, it has to take someone who has been there, done it, and has overcome it. And we have so many people who have either experienced it themselves and have overcome it and now trying to help others. And Sandy, if you want to just briefly tell a little bit about your circumstance and how you came to become a therapist, a life coach therapist, an advocate for others who are being abused or who have gone through so much trials and tribulations.
I would be happy to share that. As a young child, I went through some sexual and physical abuse. I did not get out of that until I was in my 30s, because after the sexual and physical abuse as a child, then I married someone who continued that cycle of abuse. I did not think I deserved anything more. So I feel as though I got my first real taste of freedom upon getting away from those situations, and then realizing that that's not who I am, and I don't have to live that way, and I have moved forward. I have studied a great deal. I have put my heart and soul into what I'm doing, and so the reason I want to work with reentry people and families that are suffering the pain from reentry, or you know, from the reentry, or having a loved one incarcerated, because after I had my sense of freedom, I want everyone to have that sense of freedom. And you can still have a sense of freedom even if you are incarcerated, by delving into your mind and letting things go, and growing positively.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important for people to understand there are some people in the communities who have experienced abuses, and yet they have also delved into finding out about prisoners, about the circumstances, about things like that, that helps them to be able to understand more fully what some people are going through and learning not to stereotype. In the case of Sandy, she experienced it. It hurt. It was painful. It always is painful for a victim to go through something like that. But at the same time, she delved deeper into this situation, not with just one type of prisoner, but with all types. And she was able to see that there are different circumstances, different situations. And she became an advocate. So Sandy is not just an advocate for the incarcerated. She's also an advocate for the victims. We have people in this country who cannot let go. We have media who will report news that they don't have the complete evidence or full evidence on, or accurate evidence. They will report it, pre-report it, before they get all the facts. We have people in the communities that judge right away. They judge because somebody has been harmed, not looking at the person that actually did the harm, because there's two sides to every story as well. But we're not looking at being insensitive. We don't want to be insensitive to victims, but we also want to look at both sides, because we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses. We have an epidemic of addictions. We have an epidemic in this country of anger, with so many people out in the communities that no one has to be stereotyped. There are so many different circumstances around these issues. And we're hoping to start bringing more awareness to all of you. And sometimes people like Sandy and others who have been through these traumas, who have turned their lives or overcome these situations and had tried to help others, we have had people that were judgmental even to them, even to these advocates. They don't take into consideration that these advocates have been there, have done it, have overcome, and have searched and sought, have actually confronted prisoners. And these are the things that we will be talking about today. And we have on with us as well, we have Bob Chattel, who has been an advocate for Shane Crum for some time now. And Bob Chattel also has an organization. And Bob, we'd like to have you speak a little bit about yourself and your organization.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I wasn't able to get in the way I usually get in today, so I finally just called the number, and the number seems to have gotten me in. So I hope that we won't have any technical. Hello? Yeah, we had technical problems last week when I was speaking, but no one could hear me. So I hope it goes a little better this week. Yeah, my name is Bob Chattel. I didn't get to introduce myself somewhat last week, but I'll tell you a little bit more about my organization, because I know that Shane has been anxious to let me do that. I got involved actually in 1995 when I met a man at a party named Mark Pendergrass, who had just written a book called Victim Memory, mainly about the problems of false memory. Also, he talked written this book about some famous wrongful convictions and daycare cases at the time. And I became interested. I bought his book. We began to, of course, and by email. And then a couple of years later, in 1997, I attended a very important conference in Salem, Massachusetts, about these wrongful convictions. I got involved in a case in Massachusetts with never convicted during daycare hysteria, Bernard Barron. I formed an organization to help him personally. I got involved with other cases. And then the National Center for Reason and Justice came into being. Our early focus was on accusations, wrongful convictions, and we got involved in quite a number of cases. I think we're currently involved in 24 cases. I should point out, however, that Shane is actually not one of those cases. And the reason is not that we think he's guilty. We certainly did not. It's just that we are not taking any new cases for the time being. We just have too many cases. We have too few resources, that we really can't expand that area of work. So I've been, over the last year, saying more and more on education, advocating for criminal justice reform, pointing out problems with the criminal justice system. Before the pandemic, we did sponsor a number of public events, and that came to the end with the pandemic. We are, however, beginning to do some online events. We had our first online event last week, and I hope to have many more. And I would hope that people might be able to tune into these events. And the way to do that is go to our website. The organization, the National Center for Reason and Justice, or NCRJ. Our website is ncrj.org. If you can't remember that, you can just Google National Center for Reason and Justice, and you get information about what we've done. Pardon?
So I can't talk, but
excuse me, I hear you say something.
Oh, no, that's okay. Continue with it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, that's ncrj.org. Is that correct, Bob?
Ncrj.org, National Center of Reason and Justice. It tells you about who we are, what we've done, what we are doing. And if you go to the link called News, you'll be told how to subscribe to our email list, to our blog. And, as we do more and more events, we'll send out the information about those events and how to sign up for them. So that, in a nutshell, is what the NCRJ is all about.
Fantastic. And so I'll be looking forward to your next online event.
Thank you.
Leona, do we have Shane?
No, Shane hasn't come on yet. I don't know what happened. I interviewed Bob Chattel and Lou Piccone last week. This week we were supposed to have Shane on, and I understand. So I don't know if he's been allowed to make the call. I mean, come out of his cell yet. We know that the prisoners are being kept in their cells 20, quite a few hours a day, and they're let out in periods of time. It's been Shane's case to be coming out around this time, but there could have been a problem where they didn't allow them to come out at this time. So he may come on sometime during the interview, during the show. But as it stands right now, we haven't heard anything from him.
Okay. Now, dealing with prisons, it was very, anything happened at any time, you know, maybe some event causes a general lockdown, and then no one can leave their cell, no one can have a visit, and there's no way of finding out about what actually happened until afterwards. And I do hope that he can call in today, because I do have another commitment at about before 1:15 today. So I hope that Shane can connect in with you before 1:15. But
yeah,
it'll just happen to see what happens.
So. Bob, you mentioned something that is very important. This is something the audience should know too. Is again, there are times when something happens in a prison, on a block, there might be a fight may break out. And during these pandemics,
yeah,
especially because these people are kept in their cells so long that there's a lot of frustration that the prisoners are going through. So when Bob mentioned it could be a lockdown, you want to explain more about that, Bob, so the audience understand that as well?
Well, the term speaks itself, you know, that everyone is turned to their cell, they are locked in their cell, and they are locked, they're in the pretty much indefinitely until the lockdown ends, you know, which there's no recreation, there's no phone access, there are no visits. It's something that prisoners in general, particularly hate, and it's it doesn't really take much to cause a prison to go into it in lockdown. I fortunately, my only exposure to prison has been in prison visiting rooms, and I have spent many, many hours visiting prisons, visiting prisons and visiting rooms, and I have got a sense of the horrors of prison life. And as I said, it's second half, but prisons as they're constituted in this country, I think by and large, it's cruel and unusual punishment just being put in prison. And we have far more people in prisons than any other country in the world. And other countries treat prisoners much humanely. Not to say that they coddle prisoners, but they give them basic necessities. They give them decent food. They give them adequate medical care. I mean, the medical care in American prisons is a disgrace. And these countries that treat prisoners with a measure of humanity have more lower crime rates than we have in this country. So, it's just basic meanness. It doesn't really serve any good purpose.
No, it doesn't. It certainly doesn't. And, all too often, many of these people who are incarcerated are not even able to have a picture with them of a loved one. And oftentimes letters are held up so they can see the letter, and then it's destroyed so they can't keep the letter. And this I know because of people that I've been interviewing for my book. And this is a problem that it's so dehumanizing. Not to allow these people even the comfort of holding a letter that was written by someone that loves them. So, you know, not only are they stripping them away of being able to leave their cells, a lot of these people don't have chairs to sit in their cells. You know, I spoke with a family member of one the other day who is a rather large individual, and he is elderly also. And he's 6'3", weighs about 300 pounds, and it takes him longer than the allotted time to take his shower. So there have been times where they take him to the shower, they come back 30 minutes later, and he's not quite finished. So they lock him in there, and they come back to get him. He's waited 2 or 3 hours in that shower for someone to come and get him and take him back to his cell.
Another alarming thing I've seen happen in the last few years is that more and more prisons are not allowing prisoners to receive greeting cards. They're not allowing them to receive birthday cards, not allowing them to receive Christmas cards. Some prison will take the card and they will do a black and white copy of the card and give the prisoner a piece of paper with a black and white copy of a greeting card. And New Hampshire is a dream. They don't allow anything in except handwritten letters. You know that nothing typed can go in. And I'm not quite sure what they're worried about. I think with greeting cards, I think they're concerned that there might be a way of concealing a minuscule amount of drugs in a greeting card. I'm not sure how you would do that, but that's the only possible concern I can see other than just plain simple meanness. So.
You know, there's so much. I know now, and I don't know if it's in prisons throughout the country, but I know in many of these states now, they are even making photocopies of all incoming mail to prisoners. They're keeping the original letter. And they're giving the prisoners copies, which to me is very invasive. It's very invasive.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that can be allowed.
I don't either, and I don't understand. They have now, you know, they have stripped these people of who they are as individuals. They're not looked at as individuals. So I don't know how much more they can take away. They can't take much more away, especially since we know in many cases the food that they are being served from the cafeteria oftentimes is inedible. You know, I have had reports of food that has been expired, you know, and as we spoke, bugs and things being in the potatoes. And so it's very difficult to wrap your head around why this continues to happen and why it is okay with so many people.
You know what I found last evening on CNN News? They were talking about the prison foods. Now, and the reason that this came about was because if you had followed the destruction at the Capitol in Washington, the one that was wearing the horns. He was, I guess his lawyer, they were demanding that he be fed organic foods. And so CNN last night had it on the news that prisoners are being served, are not fit for human beings. Some of them, a lot of the food are even labeled approved or whatever for consumption,
not for human consumption.
Exactly. They were talking about it on CNN last night, basically comparing what it is for somebody that tried to destroy, you know, the Capitol, the White House, in comparison to prisoners in the prisons across the country being forced to eat garbage, you know, being forced to eat food that's not even for human consumption. And that's the first time I've ever heard any news media talking about these issues, because it is a serious, serious issue, the way these prisoners are being fed. You know, even the soaps that they're using, it's the soaps are drying out their skin. It's leaving residue on them. It's a lot of these things. And again, I have to say, this is the United States of America. You know, what they do in this country to their citizens who are incarcerated is less than inhumane for any country that's supposed to be a role model for all countries.
I think one of the things always disturbed me most about the mistreatment of prisons is denial of adequate medical care. I mean, I have been in touch with prisoners who have been going through some horrible health problems, and you know, if they actually get to a infirmary, they might be sent back with some aspirin. You know that. I've people go through very, very serious dental problems that were left untreated until it was really, too late to really do anything except a bunch of teeth. Bernard Byrne, who was the first prisoner I really got close to, went to the thing with those horrible, horrible toe infections. That he could not get them take seriously. And Barron was fortunate in that he had a very good lawyer, raised holy hell with the prison, and basically would not assist until he actually got in some place where that toe could be. He could have lost his foot. He could have died from the infection. You know, it was, most prisoners don't have the advantage of having really, really good lawyers who will fight really hard for a prisoner. You know, so it's a very unfair, very unequal system.
It is. And you just said it. Lawyers, there are good lawyers and there are bad lawyers. They're corrupt lawyers, just like there are with politicians, just like there are with others. But we have some good ones, too. You know, and unfortunately, just like law enforcement, just like correctional officers, prison officials, unfortunately, sometimes the bad seems to take over, you know, the good. And that's sad, that. But
yes, I've
again,
heard often that rather than receiving blood pressure medication, they're giving aspirin or Tylenol. You know, that's not blood pressure medication.
No. And you know another
and
thing
I
is
did
there
are recently. I'm sorry, Leona.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say recently I was reading online about an individual that had a blood clot and was really struggling just to get from one place to another, to the point where he was on the ground. They kept saying, there's nothing wrong with you, get up. He lost his leg because of this blood clot, but he also lost his life. Getting them to take you to a medical facility is very, very difficult from what I'm understanding and hearing other people say.
Yeah.
It took one individual a year to be able to go and be seen by a medical professional. A year.
You know, right now there's still prisoners out there with damage done to their bodies that have still not gotten treatment, and they've been suffering for years. You know, some in solitary confinement, you know, who unjustified, who have been ignored by everyone, members of society. You know, there's people out there that don't have family that no one even knows about what they're going through. There's no accountability to any of this that's going on. There's no accountability in these prisons. There's no accountability over these Department of Corrections nationwide. People are being treated like animals. We're in a country that's full of resources, and yet people in prison are being denied a lot of these resources, educational, work. You know, they're even being denied books that are being sent to them, whether it be through a company or whether it be through an advocacy organization. They're denied these things. The mail is being tampered with. A lot of times they're not getting their mail. They just started something recently to have the chaos, I guess you call them chaos, on the blocks, where all of their legal documents become now digital. These people cannot even have privacy with their own legal documents. Those who are filing lawsuits, it's going to be seen by the very people that they're filing lawsuits against, which is going to cause retaliation, which is going to cause solitary confinement, restrictive blocks, abuses, and who's seeing it? With this pandemic, very few people are able to or are willing to go into the prisons. So they know that they can get away with it because there's no one watching. Human rights organizations have to get involved in these situations because it's not just a matter of civil rights anymore. It's not just a matter of being denied a certain thing. It's a matter of human rights violations. And these human rights organizations like Amnesty International, American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, they need to get involved. They're sitting back. ACLU I don't think that they have ever done anything locally in any of these state prisons to help these prison issues. They pass it on, but yet where there's money and immigration and all these things, they're quick to jump into that.
Yeah, and something else that I think is worth pointing out is that there's no prison anywhere that is run the same. You know, even prisons within the same states are not ran the same way. Definitely, we have no federal guidelines that are working, and the Constitution is not working either, because you know they're promised that they are citizens, they are entitled to the basic rights of any United States citizen, and yet that isn't happening.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. There needs to be some accountability. Now, we have someone on the line with us. They seem to come on at mostly all the shows that we have, but they don't speak. Let's see if we can get a voice. Do you want to state your name, please? 111. 111. 1111. Nope. I don't know who it is.
Maybe just listening. I mean, if you do have something you'd like to say, we would love to hear from you. You know, we're talking about these terrible things that are happening, and the reason we are talking about this is because it's important to us to bring some change about. You know, we don't want to just talk about it. We want to form some solid plans, and that's the purpose. It's not just getting on here to complain. We are so receptive as individuals and as groups to hear ideas from different people that maybe have a solution that we haven't thought about.
That would be good. It's good for the community to involve is to answer or ask questions. You know, get answers. People judge. They're quick to judge, but, you know, we have these shows coming on every week. People need to call in, and they need to ask questions, not just about judging, but truly to ask questions, because it just has to stop. You know, it has to. And it has to, the issues have to be resolved, but it can't be resolved if people are going to judge, but they're not going to ask questions.
Well, and you know, I think any business has checks and balances. You know, any secular business has checks and balances. So
exactly.
My question would be this: how do we make sure that our prison systems and our judicial system has to follow those same checks and balances? Someone has to be held responsible at the end. And prosecutorial misconduct, these prosecutors need to be held responsible for the Brady violations they're keeping, for not sharing with the jurors what they know is going to make a difference in that person's case. And that's what I mean when I say Brady violations. So, you know, someone needs to be held accountable. What is the first step? And this is me asking, what is the first step in making that happen?
You know, the way I look at it is we need to look at the situations. First of all, what they need to do is they need to put people in the appropriate prisons. Okay, they need to put people on the same blocks that do the crime. So we have, and a lot of people say, no, it's better because you're getting the variety. But at the same time, some people are put in on blocks they shouldn't be on. You may have an elderly lifer being put on a block with young gang members, or you may have a young gang member put on a block with rival gang members. Or you can have, you know, different people put on blocks that are being soon to be released on lifers' blocks and vice versa. It shouldn't be like that. They should, first of all, they need to figure out where they're going to put these prisoners, how they're going to categorize them. And then they need to look at how are they going to work with them? How are they going to rehabilitate them? Because that's the whole purpose. It's supposed to be the whole purpose of the Department of Corrections. So come out with the programs. And there are people in prison, the majority, they have these programs for GEDs. There's a majority of people, population in prison, who have already graduated from high school. You know, a lot of them are college students or were college students. A lot of them did vocational training. So they want to, when they come up with these programs, they want to come up with programs to meet the needs and to the suit. Come up with GEDs, that's fine, but also come up with college courses, and not just for people soon to be released, but for any prisoner. Any prisoner should be allowed to benefit themselves with the programs that are out there. And college programs are helpful. Also, dog training. There's a lot of people in prison who love animals. And we all know that animals and soft music and animals are so soothing. It can bring someone's stress down. It can bring someone's anger down. It can do so much good. They need to look at some of these issues too. Look at the prisoners, look at their situations, their backgrounds, and then they can determine what areas that they can provide the most services to them or what areas they would be most suited for. I noticed in some of the research I've been doing, I noticed that they have maybe one or two programs at one prison. And those programs are, GED is one, and I forgot what the other one was. But there's so many different situations, and they need to look at the different types of programs that they can offer. The Pell Grant has been reinstated, so the funding would be there for the prisoners that are taking these courses or these educational programs. And that's something else they need to look at. Again, having the media stop reporting until they have all the facts, and also for them to report programs like Bob Chattel's program, programs like other programs that are out there to try to help prisoners. The media needs to bring those programs out. They need to make it known to these people in the communities that a lot of these programs are being initiated because the prison does not have the appropriate programs or they don't have enough of them. People in the community that want to judge, they need to take time out, look in the mirror and find out if they themselves were in the same position as these prisoners, how would they want the communities to feel or how would they want them to react? They need to try to learn more about the situations. And the only way they're going to find out about these situations is to get involved. Call these programs like Bob Chattel's program and your program, Sandy, even. You know, these are the programs they need to get involved in. Ask questions. Offer their time in any way they can to help. Let's be there for the victims, but let's also be there for the people that committed the offense because we don't know what their situations were.
That's right. And, you know, as we pointed out before, there are so many different ways to help. They don't all require giving funding and things like that. There are offer, you know, you can offer to volunteer a little bit of time.
Exactly. Writing letters or even making
writing
phone
letters.
Calls, making phone calls, doing research. You know, these are things that can be done right from their homes. You know, it's that simple. And they'll feel good about it. They can see somebody come out or something in prison doing things instead of the stereotypical views of being hardcore criminals, not wanting to do anything with their lives. Give them an opportunity to show people that they do want to do something with their lives. You know, someone told me this morning on the phone about a prisoner that had not received, and they've been in for 20-something years, that had not received any letters, no support at all, denied legal help because their case is different than others, I guess, or because the people that they reached out to, the lawyers didn't have the resources or whatever. But they were saying, this person was saying that the reason their family never wrote to this prisoner was because the prisoner once said it hurt too much to hear from family. He didn't want the letters. So they stopped writing. So for 20-something years, this prisoner wasn't getting any letters at all. And the family, he thinking the family didn't want anything to do with him. The family was saying they didn't write because he had initially said he didn't want letters because it hurt too much. But I said, when someone says something like that, don't give up on them. Keep those letters going because that's all they have. And throughout the years, this person has been in prison with no memories at all except from his childhood, whether good or bad. That's all they have. Because once they get into prison, all they get is abuse. All they get is talked down to. All they get is treated like animals. All they're fed is garbage. All the programs they offered is programs they can't benefit from. Or if they can, they're being denied those programs. There's so much going on which dehumanizes them. And they need to do away with these medical providers that are not doing their job because prisoners, as they say, there's so many of them that are still awaiting treatment that has been for damages to their bodies that has been for years. Arthritis has set in. People in their 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s have arthritis throughout their body. Moving them from prison to prison when they're damaged is not good because they can't defend themselves if they have these damages to their body. They cannot defend themselves. So they send them to other prisons. And when new people go into a prison, we all know they're challenged by other prisoners. If they can't defend themselves, what happens?
Yes, and one of the last people I interviewed for the book, he was incarcerated for 16 years for a crime he didn't commit. Finally, after further DNA testing, the real perpetrator was found and he was released. But while he was in there, and he was 16 years old when he was arrested. So, you know, he was probably 17, 18 when someone within the system copied the charges on him and passed them around to the other inmates. And he's got a scar on his face because the charge was rape.
But he didn't do it,
but he has a big scar on his face where someone took a metal pipe and hit him.
People
have been accused and all have horror stories. Bernard Barron, who was innocent and he was exonerated, he was sent to an adult prison when he was 19 years old. But he was not a big, burly guy. He was frail. And, you know, he was in there for like 2 days before he was raped for the first time. And people say, well, where were the guards? The kids aren't around, you know. And the abuse of prisoners by other prisoners is terrible. And the guards are either not around, they just turn a blind eye. And if you're in for a sex crime, the the guards to turn a blind eye. I hear it is 1:15 now, and I'm going to have to leave. I'm sorry that I hope Shane does get in, but we'll find out later. And I just wanted to thank you for having me this and giving me this opportunity to talk a little bit about my organization and what it does.
We want to thank you too, Bob. And again, we're planning on having all of you back again, probably within the next month, 4 weeks, for updates. But I want to thank you for being on the show with us. You've been a big asset, and we've really enjoyed having you on. And thank you for staying on with us. I'm sorry that Shane wasn't able to join us, but his mother will get a chance to listen to the video, the audio, and she can share what she has heard from with Shane.
Okay.
Yes,
well,
thank
you,
Bob.
Much.
I'll be checking out that live coming up.
Okay. Have a good day. Stay here. Bye.
And please keep us updated and send us the any information that you feel like may be helpful to us for the next show as well. Okay. So where are we now? Is Bob still on with us?
No, I think he had to go because he was supposed to have an appointment.
Okay,
so yes,
we had someone else on with us, an 857-1214. No? Okay. Yeah, the 111 number on with us again, and I don't know. Let's see. Let me get that off. Yeah, but some of the issues that we were talking about, Sandy, you know that these are issues that need to be addressed. You know, there's so many prisoners that are out there committing suicide, so many that are dying, and some alleged suicides when they're actually homicides. But a lot of these things need to be brought to light because people don't have a clue what they're putting a lot of people through. Like you mentioned, the wrongfully convicted. Somebody to be put in prison for all those years, convicted of something like that, a sexual assault, and then being damaged, and then finding out that person is innocent, it's disgusting. It's ridiculous.
It is, and then you find them when they are in the process of reentering society. All too often, they're released with absolutely nothing, and they're released. You know, no money, no place to lay their heads at night, no food lined up, no transportation, and yet they're responsible to get to the parole, to their parole officer.
Yeah.
So there's so much that needs to be done, and I know there are people working on programs and things to help with all of this, but I think somebody needs to be in the position to have to answer for the way the system is not working. Someone who needs to answer for that.
And
he,
you know,
needs,
the sad
or
thing
she
is,
needs to be held accountable.
Exactly. What you're saying is exactly true. It's somebody needs, and these programs like Bob's and Yoas and other programs like that, you're not, right now, these programs are pretty much nonprofit. But yet the Department of Correction across the country gets monies in their budget for doing exactly what people are from the outside are going in to do. And they have, the Department of Corrections also has volunteers that they recruit to do the very things that they're getting funding for. Volunteers that go in and do the training, they do the teaching or whatever it might be. So they're not getting all this money. People are not aware of this. They think all this money, all these programs that are being done are done by the Department of Corrections trainees, and they think that their money's going into all of these programs that these prisoners are receiving, when in fact a lot of them are not. The prisoners are not receiving the programs, not from the Department of Corrections anyway. And some of them are, but a lot of them are not, and a lot of them are being deprived programs, period. Prisoners also get targeted by family members' connections or by others that just hateful, just angry. And they always talk about being hard on crime or tough on crime because of what they're hearing. And being tough on crime does not mean to be keeping somebody at their lowest, getting them so down that they're depressed, they're ready to commit suicide, they can't take anymore. This is what happens a lot of times.
And it does. And it does happen. It happens every day.
Yeah. But we still have a couple of people on the line, and one of them comes on all the time. I don't know, this number is a 111111111, and that's a number that doesn't want to be known if they come on every time and they don't want to say anything. But,
well, I think we are going to just carry on, and hopefully at some point people will feel comfortable speaking up.
You know, that, like I say, people don't put themselves in the shoes of others, and they look at the victims and they put themselves in the shoes of the victims, which we can all do because we've all been victims at some point in time of some kind of injustice or victims of some kind of scams or victims of some kind of lies, deceptions, corruption, provocations. We've been victims. You yourself admitted from the very beginning, you told the audience about your experiences. My situation was it was abuse, emotional abuse and some physical years and years ago, longer days. But people don't realize we've all been victims in some way or another. There's a lot of people in prison who were victims before becoming offenders. Unfortunately, they were victims as well before becoming offenders. And we need to put them in consideration as well. What caused them to do what they did? Their coping skills, maybe they couldn't deal with it anymore. Some other things happened in their lives, and they finally got to the point where they couldn't deal with it anymore. They lost it. And that's where we have the epidemic of mental illnesses in this country, psychological and addiction.
Absolutely. And, people need to be able to accept others' perspectives also. Someone that grows up in an inner city, they're very likely not to have the same perspective of someone that grew up in a small rural community. 20-year-old and an 80-year-old are most likely not going to have the same perspectives. So, and it is true that children who are abused or neglected are 50 times more likely to be incarcerated as adults.
A lot of that happens as well.
Yes.
A lot. And we have people that have gone in when they were, like you say, when they were in their younger days, and they're in there now, they're 60, 70, 80 years old. Another thing I can't understand is why they keep prisoners, people incarcerated after, 80 years old, some in wheelchairs, some disabled in so many different ways. I can't understand it, not in this country. I can't understand how this country can be so different than any other country with all the resources we have in this country, and yet they can keep prisoners in forever without release.
Yeah.
And we have
cases where people prove their innocence, and yet they're still not released for up to 10 years, They've proven they're innocent. Why aren't they released immediately? They still have to stay in another 10 years.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It keeps pointing right to what everyone says all the time. Prisons for profit.
It is prisons for profit because they are doing nothing to discourage recidivism.
No.
They're not giving any of these individuals, many of these individuals, any hope of not returning to incarceration once being released.
Yeah.
Because they're not giving them any tools. They're not giving them anything to work with. Therefore, they're going to have money because they're going to come back.
done, actually, in some cases, they've actually kind of like ripped the good background of a prisoner out completely. You know, they put them on blocks that they shouldn't be on. They've written them up for things they shouldn't have written them up for. They've done all these things to discourage the person. And then when it's time to look at this person's, say, portfolio, and they see nothing there, you know, they're not going to question. And this is what I think with parole boards, I think, or board of pardons, I think they need to start, when they get these cases coming up of someone wanting commutation or compassionate release or whatever, they need to bring that person forward and ask that person, instead of taking the word of only the Department of Correction commissioners or officials below, they need to start looking at these cases and they need to start questioning the prisoners themselves. Nationwide, there are lawsuits that have been filed. And even if the lawsuits were not, if they weren't fulfilled, if the prosecutors did not win the case or whatever it may be, there's all that documentation that states why the lawsuit was filed in the beginning. And these lawsuits will confirm that these people have not received the treatment that they were trying to get or the programs that they were trying to get involved in. It will all be documented in the courts. But the Board of Parole, the Board of Pardons, they automatically take the information from the prison officials or from the governor's office without actually meeting with the client, meeting with the prisoner, and questioning them and asking them why they went all these years without taking programs, why they were in solitary, why they were supposedly have gotten the DDUs or whatever, whatever they have been charged with once incarcerated. They need to question that person.
Absolutely, they do need to question that person. And I think, you know, it's so hard to fathom when you are able to go for a walk and see nature and sit down and cook yourself whatever you might want to eat for the evening or whatever. And it's hard to even understand or believe that there are so many citizens that don't have the opportunity to even have a pen and paper, you know, or soap. You know, I talked to someone yesterday, and her son was actually, somebody donated him soap.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable to me.
You know,
the prison system is making all this exorbitant amount of money, and yet they're not providing soap or cleaning supplies.
No. And there's so many people in prison that are indigent. They can't afford, they don't get money, they don't have family sending them money. They don't have any means to buy from the canteen or whatever they call it there. They don't have the monies to buy it. And then I have to say this too. There have been mothers, there have been girlfriends, there have been wives that have actually been asked by their loved ones to send all this money that they need. One, I have to tell you, one mother or grandmother had recently mentioned that her grandson, I believe it was her grandson, had wanted money because he said that he wanted it to be transferred. He thought he was going to be transferred. So what he did, he said he sold all of his belongings because he thought that he was going to, he said they weren't going to transfer it. So he wanted her to send money. And she said she was going to send it. And I told her no, because I said, first of all, when they transfer prisoners, they transfer their belongings as well. If he's asking for this kind of money, you go on the internet, you type in prison guards caught smuggling drugs into the prisons. It's all over the internet. So
yes.
if they're asking for large sums of money every month, and they're using the excuse that they gave their belongings away because they don't transfer the belongings with the prisoners, I said, that's a red flag. So I said, you don't want to send them money. If you send anything, send $20 or $25 a month. But some of these people in prison are asking for $70, $100, and no prisoner needs that, because once incarcerated, they become the custody of the Department of Corrections. And the Department of Corrections is supposed to be providing all of these necessities.
Correct.
But if there's drugs going on in the prisons, that means the prisoners are either addicted and they're trying to get money to buy, or they're asking for money so that they can have that money to get others on. I don't know, but these are the things that people need to look at when they get requests from loved ones for large amounts of money.
That's very true. And it is documented all over that guards are bringing drugs in. And also, you know, family members are bringing drugs for their loved ones. So it is a rampant problem. But there should be a way, you know, maybe these COs need to be strip searched when they come to work.
I was just going to say, because if you say, okay, I'm sure there's a percentage, but we've been in a pandemic for a year now, and all visits have been suspended, so no family members or friends are going in, but yet the drugs are still being in the prisons. They're still being used. Prisoners are still getting high, so it's obvious it's not coming from family members or friends.
That's true.
Not for a whole year. And that's why I believe that they need to, and you just said it, they need to start looking at these guys when they come in. They need to start searching them.
Absolutely. They do need to do that.
But a lot of these smuggling in, they found it to be at night. They found it to be at night in back the prisons and places that, you know, people wouldn't see. And I don't know how they were able to catch them. There might be some informants out there. I don't know. But these are things that are being confirmed, and it's being put out there. And people, guards are being caught, and they're being, I don't know if being sentenced to prison or if they're just being fired, but that's another issue they need to start looking at.
Absolutely.
But
they're punishing individuals for the very things that the guards are doing.
Yeah, and just if you notice, when they do their internal investigations, I think 99% of the time, I've never heard of an internal investigation coming back with findings that substantiate that the prison officials were actually wrong. But when they do their own internal investigation, it's usually in favor of the prison employee, and that's why I think as well with the accountability. The Attorney General's office has been doing a good job in Massachusetts with the state police, but so far I haven't heard anything about the prisons, the investigations that are supposed or was supposed to have been done by the Attorney General's office. That hasn't occurred, I don't believe. I haven't heard anything about it, and prison issues are still the same. Prisoners kept in detained 22 hours a day in their cells, many without a lot of their belongings. Many of them getting to the point now after a year, getting to a point of frustration, and some of them are going to lose it. Some of them are going to lose it. They can't go on much longer in situations like this. There's no way that they can go on. I can't stand being in an apartment or a house for any length of time, this length of time, without getting out at some point. And we're allowed to walk through the house. We're allowed to go out in the backyard. We're about to do a lot of things. They're in a small, small cage over a year now. 22 hours in a cell. That they're out of their cell for 14 hours a week. Not even one full day a week out of their cells.
Yes, and you know, something else that's confusing to me is, you know, we are living in the world of the pandemic. However, they're shut down, so no visitors can come through. But yet when they move prisoners from one facility to another, they're shackled together by their legs, and they're all put in a bus together like cattle and moved. So how is that respecting the – what we are supposed to be doing to protect ourselves, you know, from getting this horrible virus.
Yeah. There's so much out there that needs to be resolved, and there's so much out there that needs to be revealed. And, you know, one of the things we know we're doing good is when we have people like this caller with the 1111111111 that's coming on the show all the time, and you can't delete them or anything like that. And I believe that they don't want the truth to get out. And this is what's happening all over the country. So much that needs to be revealed. A lot of it has not been revealed because the people are either being blocked or they're being trying to be kept out of the public's view or hearings. And this is what's going on in the world today.
Well, we have someone in common that was released and began speaking up about the injustice that's going on within our system, and who was rearrested for speaking up.
You know, I've been hearing a lot about that from with others too, with others.
Yes.
That are speaking up the truth, and they're getting censored or whatever. You know, and this is the kind of world we're living in now. And I tell everybody, this is the end days. This is the critical times, hard to deal with, as mentioned in the Bible. There's so much going on right now. And I believe, and it says, we're not wrestling against flesh and blood. It's against principalities and powers and darkness in high places in this world. And I think right now that's what we're up against. We're up against a lot of evil that does not want the truth to come out, that does not want positive things to happen. We still get it out there. We still let the communities know and let it be up to them to decide whether they want to serve the one master or the other. There's only two, good or bad. You know, we can do the right thing, we can do the just thing, and we can stay neutral of all these situations and try to support both sides or try to resolve the issues by helping both sides. We can do both. I've done it myself.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, Sandy, talk a little bit about your organization, your foundation here, and also some of the things that you've been doing.
Okay. My business is Victory from Chaos, and I am accredited in cognitive behavioral therapy. I work with those reentering society and family members of those individuals. You can find my business, victoryfromchaos.com, on the web, also on Facebook. There's probably more on Facebook at this point than there is on the website. I'm actually writing a book exposing things that have been going on within the system and within our many correctional institutions across the United States. My book is basically going to be recanting stories from those who have been in the system and those who are in the system, so that I hope it to be an eye-opening book. I hope that people who read the book are going to be able to get a better feel for the pain and agony these people are suffering. And spark people to say, yeah, what can I do to help? How can I help? With the cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, it's clear to me that what has happened to us is not who we are. What others say we are is not who we are. The things we have done are not who we are. We know ourselves better than anybody else. And I do want to point out to those who have been victims, absolutely. You can't compare the pain you've gone through with the pain that an incarcerated individual is going through. However, they are individuals. They are people who are being treated many, many times far worse than animals living in a shelter or being raised in, you know, many of these farms, these animal farms, who are being mistreated. And we do care about these animals. And my point is, we should also care about these people that are being treated worse than they are.
Yes. And they, there's been so many brutal, it's just unbelievable. And I just wish that the people in society would look at this, and when they hear this, I mean, it could be their own son or daughter, or it could be their own husband or wife or brother or sister. It could be anyone related to them that could be going through the same thing. And I'm sure that they would not want everybody to just ignore it when they hear about these things happening to them. I'm sure that they would not want to just have everybody say, you know, your loved one is just like anybody else. You know, let him, he did the crime, let him pay the, you know, it's not.
Yes.
It's not something they'd be so quick to say or do if it was in their immediate family members or whatever. And we have even politicians, we have even lawmakers, we have this one on the line with on the radio show with us now, this 1111111. If it's a government person, I'll tell them, or it's somebody that probably had somebody that they knew at some point in time in their life who also did something very wrong and got away with it because of who they are. And what they don't realize is sometimes they're quick to keep the truth from being known. They're quick to judge. They're quick to, you know, we're not, in this whole country, we don't have free speech, nor do we have free anything, because everybody is always monitored by a corrupt government that does not want the truth to get out. There are so many secret societies. There are so many people making money, big corporations making money off of things like this. And they don't want their truth to get out, because then they know the public, the people in the communities would start to see the truth. And maybe they would have some sympathy for the incarcerated populations.
Absolutely. At some point, it's going to happen in every family. Every family is going to suffer from another family member's bad choice or mistake, or even incarcerated for something that they did do. You know, that it is eventually going to touch everybody in some way, whether it be a cousin or a brother or a parent or, you know, a best friend, someone, you will be touched at some point. And if not, then I am so, so happy for you, but still ask you to have an open mind and to have that growth mindset where you want to learn more. You want to learn more, because the more you learn, if you are able to look at it in an empathetic way, you're going to be enticed to help.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we even have prison officials that actually monitor what's going on, not only in the radio shows, but all other places. And there's a way of finding out. They don't realize it, but there's a way of finding out. Sandy, can you continue for a minute?
Absolutely. But I think it's very, very important that we all understand that we can make a difference. It doesn't have to be, working full time, and it doesn't have to be spending a lot of money. It doesn't have to be getting out there and marching up and down the streets. It doesn't have to be that. Because each and every one of us have different values. And we all have different weaknesses. We all have different strengths. So what it takes is all of us working and letting our strengths shine through, and most of all, simply being willing. And I do understand the point from the victim's point of view. I think, but I do not believe. You know, I did have a friend that was murdered by her husband, shot and killed by him. And even though, I had to deal with that loss, and I had to deal with my anger and frustration and disbelief that he did what he did. But even so, it was not in my mind at that point, because this happened years ago. It wasn't in my mind at that point. I hope when he goes to prison, he is not able to get his medicine. He is going to be beaten. The guards are going to incite fights between the inmates, and you know that he's going to be fed maggots. I don't understand how anyone would wish that upon even an enemy. If we have anyone online that would like to make a comment or express a feeling or ask a question, please feel free to do so.
Yeah, I'm mute and I can't get back in. Sandy, I cannot get back
in. Yes.
Can you hear me, Sandy?
Oh, yes.
Okay, we're going to shut down now. The time is up. I want to thank you all for being on, for listening in, and we are going to now end the show. Thank you so much, Sandy, for being on.
To Leona.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, they're talking. Yeah, they were talking about, hold on. Yeah, I don't